Happiness runs in a circular motion. Thought is like a little boat upon the sea.
Hello and welcome to Campfires and Color Wars, a podcast about summer camps and the stories we love to tell about them. Like the time David Clark's name tag had just a little bit of space in between the first two letters and the last three of his first name, and forever after he was known as Da. I'm Micah Hart, and for the next 45 minutes or so, we're going to press pause on the world around us, transport back to the days of our adolescence, when the school year was just one long rest hour between days at camp. If you have a camp memory or a story that you would like to have featured at the top of the show, you can always email us your short stories at summercamppod@gmail.com. And if you're going to take the time to do that, why not go on iTunes, give us a rating, give us a review, so we can continue to reach as many camp people as possible. Apologies again for the delay between episodes. It's been a little while. I know you're heartbroken, but I had to get out there and do another one because I'm just in a very camp state of mind right now. My oldest son, we just took to camp for the very first time. He went for 10 days to Jacob's Camp, the camp I grew up at, and it's such a nostalgia trip. It was so great, everything about it. He had a great time. I can't say enough about the job that camp staff is doing nowadays, and he had a blast. He had apparently a Shabbati Hottie. That is not a term that I was familiar with from when I was a camper, but I suppose that's some sort of girlfriend-type date sort of thing. That's hilarious to hear about. I'm trying very hard to find ways to ask questions about it without being intrusive so that he'll just freely tell us. He's young enough at this point that I think he's not necessarily, holding anything back. I don't think he has anything to hold back. But I want to set a precedent that he can tell us these kinds of things. It was just a wonderful experience. We all, talk about this a little bit in the episode coming up, but went to Jackson, Mississippi the night before and got to see so many people who we all grew up at camp with throughout the years. And I didn't even think about that piece of it and what it will be for me selfishly with my children going to Jacob's Camp, how now I have an occasion to see all of my former camp friends, or a good portion of my camp friends once a year, because I'm old enough now that just doesn't really exist anymore. I mean, we were talking about how we were at camp, we got to see each other every summer, and then we were in college, a lot of us were staff members, and then after that we would go to New Orleans every year for New Year's, so we would still get to see each other. Then we all started to get married, and so there was always still an occasion, but since we've had kids, that really just doesn't exist anymore, and we're all scattered, to the wind across the U.S., and all of a sudden, I now have an excuse every single year, really, for the next, decade plus, to get to, reconnect and see people and trade stories, et cetera, relive old times. It's great. And again, I would have been happy for my children to go anywhere for camp. Camp is great no matter where you go. Selfishly, I'm definitely happy that it worked out the way it did. And I will share this one other anecdote because I think this has to do with camp somehow, or maybe just the camp experience that I had growing up in Mississippi, where we were so connected to the people in the other states because there weren't that many Jews in Mississippi, and so we were constantly seeing our friends in other places. While I was in Jackson, we all got together at this food hall type establishment. It's like a big common area with a bunch of different stalls, and all these camp families are there. Everyone's running around, the kids are all playing with each other, you're catching up with your friends, so it's a very, very camp environment. And while I'm there, I look, and walking in the door is a good friend of mine from college with his family. He is not Jewish, not going to camp, literally driving through town from Nashville to Houston, Texas, happened to stop in Jackson because it's a midway point, staying at the hotel next door. So completely random that he was there. And I think for most people, that would be like such a mindfuck. Just like, how is this possible? And I almost don't bat an eyelash at this point. Like, that just happens to me so often, or often enough that I'm like, yeah, of course he's here. So I guess I'm curious for anyone listening to this, feel free to reach out. Does this happen to you a lot? Is this unique to me? Or is this more broad? I think on some level it's broad because, you know, being Jews, we love to play Jewish geography. We know people in lots of different towns, different colleges, et cetera, especially if you were at the camp, walk of life. But I've run into a camper of mine and his family at the Vatican. I've run into people in Las Vegas. I had a counselor at camp who I ran into 3 straight years in 3 different cities. So I don't know. It happens to me all the time. It's always entertaining to me when it does. But it is particularly entertaining to see other people's reactions when it happens because their minds are blown. And I'm just like, yeah, it's Tuesday. What do you expect? Anyway, that said, really fun podcast. I came across a letter. Our guest Dave Cutler wrote an article in Jewish Boston about sending his kid to camp for the first time this summer. And obviously, I could relate to that going through it myself. So I thought he would be fun to talk to. Spoiler alert, he was. We had a really good time talking about our good old days and talking about some of the changes and things that are different about camp now versus when we were there. So it was a lot of fun, and I hope you enjoy it. And so without further ado, my conversation with Dave Cutler. Dave Cutler, I feel like it's almost weird that we don't know each other, given how many different intersections we have through our lives. We were talking before we got started about some of the people we know in common. We have a bit of a career in common, but it's very nice to sort of put a name to a face. I came across an article that you wrote in Jewish Boston about going to family camp and going back to the camp you grew up at. And that is particularly relevant to me right now because I just dropped my oldest son at the camp that I grew up at for the very first time. So I was like, well, I got to talk to this guy because I feel like we're kind of experiencing a lot of the same stuff at the same time. So first off, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And second, let's just sort of kick it right off. Where did you go to camp? Tell me all about your camp background.
Sure thing. Yeah, we're both living parallel lives and grappling with the reality that we're old enough to have kids at camp, which
it is
surreal.
Really, really weird, for sure.
In terms of the camp background, so I'm a Camp Ramah guy, specifically Camp Ramah, New England, which is in Palmer, Massachusetts. I was there for many summers from 1988 till 1999. I was spending summers with Ramah in some form or fashion. Included in there, obviously, were some years on staff and a year in Israel, but it was a long tenure for me.
And I think I saw from your article that your family also went there. Is that right?
It is. So my son, who just came home a few days ago from his first month at Ramah Palmer, is a third generation Ramahnik, specifically at that Ramah. My father went to Ramah in Wisconsin, so he's third generation either way, but my mother was actually at Ramah Palmer the summer that it opened in, I believe it was 1965.
Oh, wow.
We've got a long history at the camp, and my wife, who I met at the camp, went to Ramah Palmer as well, so he's got a long lineage who spent summers in Western Mass.
So I want to get into your experience with your son, but I'm curious, have you ever discussed it with your parents? Like, what was it like for them, or for your mom, I guess, in particular, when you went to camp for the first time, seeing it, the first time it was the second generation?
I don't know that I've ever really had that conversation with them in the way that I've been talking about it with my son, in part because...
Well, we've got him on the phone right here. No, I'm just kidding.
Right, yeah. Surprise. My father was a Ramah Wisconsin guy, so obviously, although he had been at Ramah, that was new for him. And although my mother was there in the first summer, she had gone to other Ramahs as a camper. She actually spent time at 3 different Ramah camps, one in Glenspey, New York, and one in Connecticut. before ultimately working at the Ramah in Palmer when it opened in that inaugural summer. So it wasn't like her, she had that same long childhood connection to having spent all her summers there. But my brother and I both went there from the time we were 11, and my parents were very actively involved and on the board, so they loved dropping us off every summer and seeing us enjoying that Ramah experience as they had as kids.
Now, we've had a few guests from some of the different Ramahs over the time, but it's been long enough that I think I can ask this and not remember what the answer to the question is. How similar are the Ramahs to your knowledge? Is it a fairly standard experience, or does each one have its various individual flavors?
It's funny, I was going to say flavors as well. So they're all relatively similar, but each one's got its own unique flavor in different respects. Obviously, they're both affiliated with the conservative movement in Judaism, but some skew a little bit more traditional than others. Obviously, it's been 20 years since I was there, so I'm sure a lot has changed, and maybe things have become a little bit more uniform. But I can tell you that I worked at Ramah Berkshire's in New York one summer, so I had that experience of going to a different Ramah and seeing some of the differences. And there's definitely a different vibe. And we encountered the same thing on Ramah Seminar, which is that Israel year after your last year as a camper when all of the different Ramah camps come together for the summer.
Right.
You get to see what some of the other camps are about and hear stories from other kids. So there's definitely some unique aspects of each of the different Ramah camps.
Yeah, so you mentioned that you think things maybe have changed in the 20 years since you were there. So I have to say, having just taken my son to his first camp experience, so he spent 10 days in this program called Olim at Jacob's Camp, which is where I grew up, and in Mississippi. And in having conversations with some of the other parents and learning more about what camp is like nowadays, you would think for someone who has been doing a summer camp podcast for going on 3 years now that perhaps I would be more familiar with what camp is. But this is a nostalgia program. This is not about current day. This is about, our time when we were in the 90s, and we've had people in the 80s and maybe some in the thousands. But point being, I am like flabbergasted by some of the changes that have happened. And it's so funny because I think about this a lot in the context of like society. So you think about, not to get all into politics necessarily, but typically the old people are the ones who become very conservative, and they're all these kids today and the damn millennials and all this, that, and the other. And I'm still young enough that I feel like I'm not that person yet. I still understand that, things change and maybe kids do things different than we did, et cetera, et cetera. All of which is to say, some of the things that I've been learning about how camp is today, I feel like that crotchety person. And I'll give you an example. So apparently at Jacob's Camp, and again, I don't know how prevalent this is. I'm very curious to know. Maybe you know about Ramah Palmer. At Jacob's, they now have a social worker on staff specifically for the campers. And they have a social worker on staff specifically for the staff members. Now, my immediate visceral reaction to hearing that is like, all right, is that really necessary? Like, part of camp is learning to handle challenges and blah, 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 blah. But the truth is, like, that's probably a wonderful idea. To actually help people process, like, what if a kid's going, like, his parents are going through a divorce? Or what if a staff member has a really difficult, there's so many reasons why that would be a good idea. But I hear it, and I immediately go back to, I want camp to be this simple place that it was when I was there. So just examples like that to me are like, I can't believe how much things have changed. Have you sort of noticed that in the limited time of just sending your kid to camp?
Oh my gosh. The differences are extreme and noticeable at first glance. So the thing that really has struck me is how much more regimented things are. And it speaks to the underlying issue that I think you're getting at and how much things have evolved and the different expectations level of parents and even the kids themselves. And the best example for me is in looking at, so I don't know if they do this at Jacob's, but and they do this at Palmer, and I know they do this at a lot of other camps now where they have like the daily photo albums of the activities happening at camp.
Oh, you're winding me up. I'm going to let you talk, but I'm going to get to it.
So I've got a text thread going with you know, folks who I went to camp with then who also have their kids there now, because we have the, we're looking at it through the same lens. And we're cracking up because the truth is, on the first off, what we said was, thank God no one was documenting our activities in the late 80s and early 90s in photo for our parents to see online. Second of all, even if anyone had tried, it would have been difficult to find a concentration of people in the same place, or more to the point, in the place they should have been to take a picture of. Like, you know, you go to the waterfront for swim class and be like, well, there's no kids here. What are we going to take a picture of? And, you know, certainly things have evolved, and it's great that they're now able to do that. But that alone, to me, demonstrated the huge differences. Like, oh, look, it's woodworking time, and all 12 kids who are registered for woodworking are there and smiling in photos.
So that's really funny for a couple reasons. I'll get back to the photo albums in a second. But so Jacob's Camp, we've talked about this ad nauseum on this podcast, but let's just say it's gone the opposite direction. It was incredibly regimented. And that's not to say that it's not regimented now, but it's, I don't believe it is as regimented as it was when I was there. And I don't, my only example of that is, this is anecdotally from what I've heard, is that I've heard meals are kind of like chaos now. Like there's cheers left and right and people, you know, sort of running around kind of up and about. Like that did not fly when I was camp. My dad was the camp director, so that was not flying in my dad's regime. Again, no judgment. One is not necessarily better or worse than the other, but it's just funny to hear you say that because you're probably right. And in probably in some ways it is more regimented at camp. Actually, I heard this, and if this is true, it makes me really sad. I heard that staff now, like there is like a hard curfew at like 1 o'clock in the morning, and that people don't stay up late and hang out, which that just hurts my soul. I mean, that's like
well,
the
I wonder
prime
in terms
time.
Of the socializing with the staff, like, so a big difference, another example to illustrate the point, there's Shmirah at Ramah, which is, you know, like who's watching the kids at night when the staff goes off to do their thing. And when I was a counselor and, you know, working on sports staff and stuff, the staff would empty out of the bunks. And then there would basically be three or four people who were responsible for watching an entire side of camp. Camp was comprised of A side and B side. And there would literally be four staff members responsible for the 20 bunks on B side. And now there's somebody in every bunk at all times.
Yep.
So at least one person has to stay behind. And that
bullshit.
Social life, like, you know, if you each night have to either draw straws or rotate or however it is they go about doing it, that's a tremendous loss on the social front.
Again, that just hurts my soul. Like, so the night before camp drop off, so Jacobs is in Utica, Mississippi. It's about 40, 45 minutes outside of Jackson. And so what people have started to do is they kind of come in to Jackson the night before and stay at a hotel. And it's this really amazing, amazing thing that, like, probably the highlight of my summer so far is getting to see all these people. You know, you talked about being, you know, a third generation, or your child being a third generation Palmer kid. I don't think that really was a thing. I don't think Jacob's Camp had been around long enough when I was growing up for that to really exist. But now, I mean, almost every camper, it seems, is a second generation. And so getting to see all of your friends and all these different, you know, ranges of age people that you knew, they were your counselors, they were your campers, like, et cetera. It's so awesome. And so I ended up staying up, hanging out with some of my camp friends until like, you know, 1:30 in the morning on Saturday night. And we were sort of talking about how, like, one, we don't ever do that anymore because we're old.
Yep. Good reason.
Right. But two, like, I think, actually, this will be a good question for you. Do you have FOMO? Like, in your life, do you suffer from FOMO?
In general?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. See, this is a hypothesis I'm working on. I need to do some more research. Because
right,
I think
let's
what
flesh
I,
this out.
Well, what I realized for myself, at least, is I think that my time as a staff member is like the epicenter of where my FOMO comes from. Because the thought that you might have gone to bed at even say 2 o'clock in the morning and then found out the next day that you missed some epic shenanigan or a prank or, you know, whatever. And like that was just like a fate worse than death. So we would stay up until like 4 o'clock in the morning doing essentially nothing just because we couldn't handle the thought that we might miss something. And I think No, I was just going to say, so, I mean, it's less now that I'm older, but generally speaking, I still suffer from that. Like before I had kids, I would stay up until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning for no reason. And I think it was just because, well, what if something happens and I'm not going to be up for it? And it kind of reminded me of that. So I'm wondering if that's where it comes from, but maybe it's a personal thing.
It could be from there. I've always been able to compartmentalize, like you shut off the camp brain in the months that you're not there. But what I was going to say is what made it even more difficult for us, I assume you're roughly the same age as I am. This was pre-cell phone.
Yeah.
So there wasn't even the option of getting hit up with a text from a buddy like, oh, this is going down, or like, we're at this spot, come meet us. Like you said, you'd find out the next day you missed some epic thing that everybody's talking about for the next week. Oh, well.
Yeah. You know, it is one of those things where I'm sure, you know, curfew or whatever aside now, I'm sure if you're at camp now, you're still having a great time just like we did when we were there. But I do believe that we are fortunate to have grown up when we did and have been at camp before technology really introduced itself, because you really had no choice. I mean, at Jacob's, there was nothing else to do. We were in the middle of nowhere. You couldn't leave at night. I know a lot of camps are closer to civilization. You can kind of go out, go to a bar or whatever. That was not a thing at Jacob's. So you only had each other, and you had to figure out ways to entertain yourselves. And that was, you know, that was great. And if you, you know, if you describe that to someone now, I mean, that sounds terrible, and I understand why. But it really was terrific to have that complete solitude, and just it forced you to, you know, forge bonds, you know, that have lasted a long time. And I imagine you have the same.
Absolutely. And I'm with you on the notion that we benefited from having gone through it before being tethered to our devices. You know, I do wonder for some of these kids, none of my kids are old enough to have their own phones yet, but I wonder for the older campers, it's like almost a detox being at camp for the summer and not having access.
You know, it's interesting. I think it's actually, it's gone, because you could bring devices. You couldn't, when cell phones didn't exist, but like you could bring little Game Boys and various things like that. I think they have a pretty strict no technology policy now because of how far it's gone in the other direction. So I think, you know, that's one area where camps, I believe have done a really good job of kind of separating that and making people sort of actually, you know, talk to each other. So your son went for his first summer and you just picked him up, is that right?
Yep, just a few days ago.
So what was it like for him? What was your expectation, whatever it was, and did it meet it? Or was it different than what you expected to hear?
I don't know if I had an expectation as much as a hope. I was hoping that he would have a good time and kind of catch that fever, if you will, start drinking the Kool-Aid. If he didn't, that's great. But that was definitely our hope, and he absolutely did. He, from what he tells us, you know, experienced a little bit of that integration the first few days where he was kind of homesick and feeling his way out. And then after he got his sea legs under him, he was all in and had a great time and is already talking about going back next summer. So it was really interesting to see camp through his eyes again for the first time. And especially you forget what it's like when in those first few summers, when you have sort of an earnest view and you're naive about things. You know, he told me a story about a sneak out that they did. And when he first started to tell me the story, going back to our earlier point about how monitored everything is, I was thinking like, how'd they sneak out? But he's telling me the story. And in the midst of the story, he just casually mentions that the counselors were with them.
Right. Right.
And I was sneak out.
Right.
But he felt that it was, so much so that I guess as they got back in the bunk, the assistant director of the camp happened to walk by and they breathed a big sigh of relief, because if he had spotted them, they would have been in huge trouble. So and that cracked me up, like the young, innocent view of camp, which is obviously the opposite end of the spectrum from where you're looking at it by the time you're at the tail end of your camper years, and especially when you're on staff in latter years. So it's fun to hear about it from him, and you know, the technology piece, I wish that they had that same experience we did. Selfishly for us as parents, one of the things that's nice is to know a number of people that work there. You know, the assistant director that he mentioned was in my bunk for a number of years when I was a camper. And then I have a few other friends who work there during the summer. And so it was nice to be able to just like shoot somebody a text and be like, can you check in or have you seen him? How's he doing? Sometimes people would on the sly, like if they had their phone with them, you know, just take a picture if they happened to see him doing something and send it to me. Because it's crazy. We have so much immediate interaction with our kids. You know, you debrief the day with them after their day at school or day camp. And then although we were exchanging letters back and forth, to like send a letter and then wait. It felt so antiquated, right? Like you send a letter and you're like, okay, I'm going to wait a few days and hopefully he'll answer the question.
What is this lack of instant gratification that I'm experiencing? Exactly. I'm so unfamiliar with it. So you said he was homesick maybe for a couple days. And I read in your piece that you were a homesick child a little bit as well. So what was it for you that kind of got you over that hump when you were a camper?
I don't know, because for me it wasn't – his was a few days and he got past it. That whole first summer for me, my parents have actually – I should dig up and write a follow-up post because my parents still have the letters that I wrote to them that summer.
Oh, that's good.
And comedically awful because I described everything as the worst thing ever and I hate this and this is awful and you come pick me up early – and yet when it came time to consider the next summer, I was like, yeah, sign me up. I want to go again. And I hit the ground running the next summer. So I don't know what, you know, if it's just a little bit more maturity or I felt more of a comfort level going back to a familiar place.
Now, if your son had done that this summer, if you were getting a ton of letters saying, I hate it, I want to come home, how would you have responded? Or how, not necessarily responded to him, but in your mind, how would you have taken in that news?
I think having gone through that myself, I would have taken it with a grain of salt. Certainly it could have panned out that he was like, screw this. I want no part of this place. But it also could have been just what I went through. Like first summer, you're a little bit young, you know, he's still 10. He's actually a year younger than when I started. He's 10.
Okay.
So he's young enough that it would make sense that, you know, unfamiliar surroundings and, you know, being away from home for the first time is a little bit much to process. And I would have kept the fingers crossed that he would have done the same thing I did and still want to go back next summer.
Yeah, I always get a kick out of the people who, went to camp for years and years and then the first sign of trouble with their children are like, well, I don't know. And I'm like, but you went to camp. You knew homesick kids. Like, they get over it. It happened. Like, it's part of the journey. It's totally fine. First of all, he was only there for 10 days. And secondly, he was pretty – it's funny. I would describe him as nonchalantly excited about camp. Like, I think he was excited, but I think he also kind of understands that we were excited for him to go, and therefore if he represented that he was excited, that would make us happy. So I don't think he was, like, not excited, but I think he was just kind of like, yeah, I'm excited, but didn't really have, like – hadn't put a whole lot of thought into it.
Right.
But if he had been homesick, I would have just been like, yeah, whatever, dude. You're going back.
Yeah, we did hear from a friend who was getting letters from their son similar to what I had been sending all those years ago.
Yeah.
And they were like, he wants us to pick him up early. We are not doing that.
Yeah, not a chance.
So whether he'll go back next summer, we'll see.
Right.
But I will say, you know, shout out to Palmer and the wonderful family camp program that they run. That is a great way to get kids at least familiar with the space. And there's no way you can recreate camp in a non-summer setting.
Right.
But
at least you get familiar with the surroundings and some of that stuff. Yeah, I think that's been a really
– I think that helps a lot.
Yeah, great development. You mentioned the friends that are working at camp. I had a friend who was the doctor at camp the first week, and he sent me a text that my son was playing tetherball, and I loved tetherball growing up. I was like the Tiger mm-hmm. Woods of tetherball. And so he saw me, he's like, Jamie, you know, your dad used to play tetherball. He was pretty good. And Jamie told him, he's like, yeah, I know. He told me. I'm like, yeah, that's probably true because we've played tetherball a few times. And I was like, you know, back in the day, Pops was pretty good. one thing real quick, and then we'll move on to the questionnaire. So you mentioned the camp photo albums, and now that I've experienced this as a parent, and not just in theory, yeah, it's a big difference from when we were at camp. And my dad has this whole thing, which again, I know I've ranted about this on the podcast before, but has this whole thing about how it's such an invasion of privacy to him that the whole purpose, maybe not the whole purpose, but one of the beautiful things about camp is that you get to be yourself without any prying eyes. And that, you know, now you can see every single thing your child is up to. And so, of course, I am, you know, I drank the Kool-Aid that my father is brewing. So I agree with that completely. And at the same time, I mean, every single day I was looking at the photo albums. And I would have this, like, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. Click!
Yep. We all fall victim to it.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not? You want to see your kid and what they're up to. Yeah, it was a great first run for him. I'm excited. He had a good time. And, you know, I look forward to him continuing on the journey. We have two kids, so we're 2 years away from having, like, no kids at home for a little bit of time. You have 4 children, is that right?
We do, yeah. We're probably 6 years away from potentially having all of them gone. So we've got to bite our time, but we're looking forward to when that day comes.
Yeah, but when it gets here, oh boy, it'll be sweet. well, cool. Well, let's move on to our Campfires and Color Wars questionnaire. Title still pending. This is just a few questions to elicit some more stories from your time at Palmer. First question. Tell us about your first kiss or your most romantic moment at camp.
I don't remember the first kiss. Most romantic moment. So, I don't know. I was one of those guys, like a lot of people, who had a lot of like long-term, long-distance, you know, serial monogamist.
Sure.
I had probably 4 or 5 girlfriends over like an 11-year span where each of them was pretty long-term. I don't know that there was ever any one big romantic moment that I can point to, but certainly it was a good source of a dating pool. I'll say that.
So you said your wife, you met your wife at Palmer, or y'all just both went to Palmer?
I met her there, although we never dated when we were there. We were friends. We were 2 years apart, which, and you know, when you're a camper is pretty wide gap.
Yeah.
And I think the first year we really like hung out was when she was 16 and her last year as a camper and I was 18. And my best friend was the softball coach and she was the star of the girls' softball team. So I would hang out at practice with him and she was always entertaining and had a smart mouth on her. So we got a kick out of that.
And so for you, was it just like a happy sort of coincidence that you ended up with someone who had gone to camp with you?
Yeah, I think I hoped that would be the case. You know, I dated some people in college who hadn't gone to Ramah with me, but also dated someone in college pretty long term who had been in Palmer with me. You know, I think given how integral a component that was in my life, most of my close friends are from my Ramah days. And so it definitely makes life easier that we have that shared experience. It can be funny at times, like there's no secrets, you know, we were friends with each other's exes because
sure.
We all went to camp together.
Totally.
And we know most of each other's history, but I can also vouch for her and she for me when we're telling our kids about our athletic feats from our teen years in Palmer.
Nice. Well, we'll get to that in just a minute. Tell us about your best camp performance.
My best camp performance. So every summer at camp, the ADA, the age group that you're a part of, puts on a play at camp. And that was never really my jam. I wasn't much of a theater guy. But my best friend was usually the male lead in those plays. And our last summer, when we were 16, in the oldest age group, he came to me and he said, we're doing this play, and it's a series of vignettes. And there's a scene where I pick up this woman at a bar and we go back to my place and then she takes off her dress and it turns out she's a man and we're wondering, you know, will you play that role? And
this is at summer camp?
This is at summer camp. I said, sure, sounds like fun.
Okay.
I was a lot thinner in those days, so I could rock a dress a little better than I can now.
That's some pretty heavy source material for a summer camp play.
Was
it Lola the musical?
I think they weren't spot checking those things back then as well as they do now. I distinctly remember in the middle of their performance looking over and the camp director was sort of, you know, off stage right and with bug eyes, like, what is happening right now? I need to put an end to this. As I peeled the dress off for the big reveal. You know, that's probably my best camp performance. That's definitely the most memorable camp performance, I can tell you that.
That's insane. That's so fun. I mean, I'm just picturing, like, so I went to two camps. The other one I went to, the oldest unit would do a musical every session. And it was always like, you know, Fiddler on the Roof or, you know, Mary Poppins, like something that's relatively wholesome. I guess Oliver's about a vagrant and orphan, so maybe that's, I don't know. But, a trans one-night stand seems like a strong,
it was pretty far
strong
afield,
subject matter.
Usually more, you know, Grease was like about as wild as a guy.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. All right, number three, tell us about your most embarrassing camp moment.
I think that previous one, actually, you know what? That should be the answer to all of them. That was my most romantic moment. Me and Paul on stage.
You guys were really committed to the role. You were totally nothing.
It was my best performance, and it was also my most embarrassing moment.
So
the photo evidence to document.
All right, so what was the reaction of the crowd to this play?
I think it depended on what their perspective was. You know, the people we were friends with were dying laughing and were like, I cannot believe they're doing this on stage in front of the entire camp right now. Some of the higher ranking staff members were like looking for the kill switch on the power in the building. So it totally depended
on. Turn
the
mics off!
Right, from what perspective you were looking at it, but most people got a kick out of it.
Now, in hindsight, or I guess since then, like, has this stuck with you? Are you known in Palmer circles as that guy, or was it just a one night? It just lived in that moment, and then that was it.
Thankfully, I had other things to be known for, you know. And then having been a longtime staff member, and I was, you know, the head of the sports program and coached the basketball team, and so there were other things. Thankfully, otherwise that probably would have been the thing that stuck. It was definitely memorable for folks. Like I doubt there's been a similar performance in the 20 years at Palmer.
Yeah, that's pretty legendary. You know, but good to have some. You know, good to be associated with something legendary.
Right. I guess. Yeah. Let's go with that.
Yeah. Exactly. Always look on the bright side. Number four: top bunk or bottom bunk?
Bottom bunk all the way.
Really? Okay. What's your rationale?
When I first got to camp, I didn't want to be on the top bunk. Not that I was full-blown afraid, but I move around a lot in my sleep, and I was pretty sure I was just going to roll off the side and end up on that hardwood floor. And then as I spent more time at camp, it was pretty, you know, we had those spring bunk beds where as somebody got on the top bed, it hung down low, so it was almost in your face and you're on the bottom.
Yep.
Which, then the fun game to play was to put your feet on the bottom side of it and kick up and launch the person. And everybody did that. And I had a good time doing that to other people. And, I think there would have been hell to pay because I was owed a lot of payback for my years of bunking people. So it really just wasn't an option for me to take the top bunk.
I always wonder, how much did that happen, like ratio wise, how much did that happen in the guys' bunks versus the girls' bunks? Because I don't know many.
I assume it was more common in the guys' bunks.
Yeah, but I don't know many people that had a bottom bunk that weren't doing that at some point during the day. And I'm sure it happened some on the girls' side, but I don't know if they're as mean to each other in that way. They're mean to each other in other ways.
In other ways, yeah.
All right, number five. It seems like you did a lot of sports stuff, so let's. I'm curious to hear your answer to this. Tell us about your best athletic achievement at camp.
My best athletic achievement. So at Palmer, you asked about some of the differences between the Ramaz. One thing that's a little bit unique to Palmer and Berkshire's is that there's a huge rivalry between the two camps.
Okay.
They play each other in sports what used to be one day in the summer, and now it's 2 days because they now do a JV and a varsity.
Jeez.
It used to just be like one day, 10 or 12 different sports. Huge competition, and there were folks who lived for that for an entire year. And in the first 10 years of the camps playing each other, Palmer hadn't won in boys basketball. And it's with each passing year, it became more of a sore spot and more of a David versus Goliath thing. And when I was 15, which was the second oldest camper age, I was a starter on the basketball team and we won for the first time, which cemented thank you. Which cemented us as you know, like the inaugural team to win. And then I guess I would couple that, although not an athletic achievement because I wasn't on the court. It was sort of a funny. My brother was the coach of that team, so he was the first coach to win, and I was a player on the team. And then it took another 5 years, but when I was coaching and my cousin was the star of the team, we won for the second time. So it was nice to be able to have two of those under the only two under my belt in one form or fashion.
Now, if you were to find yourself at Ramah Berkshires, would you find occasion to mention that to people as much as possible?
I don't miss an opportunity. In fact, so funny story, when I was 16, unfortunately, I lost the next year when I was 16. But during that summer, I moved from Rhode Island to New Jersey. So I left camp from Rhode Island and went home to camp in New Jersey.
Oh, wow.
And where I moved to was there were a lot of Berkshires folks. And actually, I went to a Jewish high school when I moved to New Jersey. And in the high school, it was filled with Berkshires people, including some of the guys we had beaten. And unfortunately for them, especially the kids that was their oldest summer, they were known as the guys who had finally lost to us. So I had a lot of fun. I got to school and I was like, hey, guys.
How's it taste?
So I'd never missed an opportunity to remind them of it. It turns out that in the last 10 years or so, Palmer is the dominant team. But in those early years when the wins were few and far between, you had to take the opportunity to rub it in when you could.
That's really, I mean, I love all of the stuff about that. Like, I'm just sort of picturing, like, the coach kind of in the pregame, like, you know, get everybody fired up speech. Like, listen, guys, you will never be an athlete outside of these walls. But while you are here, this is your chance to shine. Like, you're 5 foot nothing, 100 and nothing.
100 and nothing, yeah.
But yeah, within you can be Babe Ruth.
I played small-time shitty college basketball. I was a D3 basketball player.
Oh, no
but my memories of playing in those Palmer Berkshires games stand out more than, you know, my garbage time against Wesleyan when I was in college.
That's awesome.
But to your point about how meaningful it was, like, I actually remember giving that speech, you know, a little bit misguided, but to kind of hammering that point home. I was, matter of fact, I think it was like my third or fourth year coaching, and you reach that it is what it is phase. And I had the team gathered before, and I think they were looking for the fiery speech, and I just laid it bare for them. I said, look, guys, after this game, one team is going to be crying on the court. So you can either be that team crying or you can be that team celebrating. And that was just, I was stating the facts because it meant that much to the
right.
kids. They were either going to be just sobbing or, you know, elated. I was which team do you want to be?
Who do you want to be? Do you want to be the team crying or do you want to be the team standing over them while they are crying, screaming in their faces at how terrible they were? That's awesome. Yeah, you know, Jacob's camp is in the middle of nowhere, Mississippi, and there's no other Jewish camp within a good ways. So we never really had the opportunity for any kind of rivalries like that. I feel like that would have been a lot of fun. So we just had it internally. All right, we'll move on to our last segment, which is Bitches and Roses, a.k.a. Roses and Thorns, a.k.a. Coals and Diamonds, a.k.a. Strawberries and Lemons, a.k.a. Peaks and Valleys, a.k.a. Pals and Wows. A lot of different names for this part of the program.
The Apollo Creed intro in Rocky, where they went through like 37 nicknames.
That's right. It's kind of like Danny, the mother of dragons, the author of Bitches and Roses. So, Dave, you're our guest, so I'll happily allow you to go first. Tell us, you said it was Roses and Thorns for you at Palmer. So let's. What is your rose and thorn for today?
So my rose was, you know, picking up my son a couple days ago from camp and just seeing how excited he was, you know, ran over, excited to see me. That was a nice win in and of itself, like, oh, he's still happy to see me. And then we had about an hour and a half car ride home, and he actually wanted me to pepper him with questions, which is a stark contrast from the school year when I'm you know, using enhanced interrogation tactics to get him to tell me anything about what happened at school. The more questions I had, the more he was like, what else do you want to ask me? So it was awesome, just his unbridled enthusiasm about camp and wanting to share every detail of what had happened that month.
That's awesome.
My thorn, I guess, is that, you know, those times are over for us. Like, as nice as it is to see our kids going through it, it's a harsh reminder that those days are long in our rear view mirror and there's no going back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. There was definitely the pains of nostalgia for sure for the entirety of the experience for me. My bitch is, my toilet broke.
Literally.
Yeah, that's right. Fortunately, it wasn't a bad break, which is to say the tank is leaking, so it's not, there's no, like, you know, health hazard. It's just annoying. But yep. I thought I could fix it, and I went to the hardware store and I got some parts and I replaced it, and I mean, I was just so proud of myself, because this, I am not a handyman in any way, shape, or form. And then I put a little water back in on my dad's advice just to test it, and it's still leaking. And so I am now faced with what is like the ultimate dilemma for me, because I'm very cheap. I need to get a new toilet. And yep. The woman at Lowe's is like, you could replace it. Like, you could do this. It'll take you some time, but you could do it. And so part of me is like, all right, I want to be a man. I want to be able to prove to myself that I can do this. It's $119 for somebody to come install it. And I'm like, I really don't want to spend that amount of money, because I probably
can
go on YouTube.
That's $119 worth of peace and mind, Micah.
I know. So I'm just having this really, you know, this internal struggle about what to do here. We'll see. But we have so many things that we need to fix around our house. And I think a toilet is probably one of the ones that we can't avoid. We do have other toilets, just to be clear. But this is the downstairs one. So anybody that's coming through the house, this is likely the one they would use. So I'm going to have to make a decision here pretty soon. My rose, is kind of just everything about the experience of taking my son to camp, getting to see old friends, getting to catch up with people, getting to go back through the gates, and sort of seeing it. I literally, this is my first time ever doing camp drop-off, because when my dad was the camp director, I was just already there. I didn't have to go through the gates. I don't remember this, but when I was really young, my dad did actually put us in the car and drive out and then drive back in, probably just because he thought it was funny. But it was very surreal, like, getting to see it from the other side. And oh my God, how young the counselors are. It's so funny to think how old we thought they were when we were campers. And they are just
that
little,
was the same thought I had.
Just little babies. But my overall rose from the experience was, we sent my son to camp with stationery to write us letters, and we addressed them for him and everything. And then, and they were all addressed to us. My wife did it, so I don't know if it was to mom and dad or to the family or whatever. While he was there, we got in the mail a letter addressed to his brother. And it was a letter to his brother. And that means that he, of his own volition, decided to write his brother a letter and address it and send it to him. And that just warms my heart. I'm not a sentimental person for the most part. But that was really awesome. And I was very happy to see that. So that's definitely my rose.
That's an awesome one.
Yeah. And with that, that is our show. If you would like to subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, and the other podcast listening tools you can find. If you want to follow us on social media, we are on Facebook and Twitter at Summer Camp Pod, and on Instagram at Campfires and Color Wars. If you want to send us your memories of, or your stories of dropping your children at camp for the first time, or things that you have found very different about camp now versus camp when you grew up, you can always send us an email at summercamppod@gmail.com. And Dave, if people wanted to find you on the interwebs or on social media, where can they find you?
I blog about my experience as a dad of four at thedad.life. And so folks can find me there or on any social platform. I'm Cutler Dave, CutlerDave.
Nice. And we'll post a link to your blog in the show notes. If you want to hear more from me, I'm on Twitter at Micah Hart. Yeah, rejected WWF, RIP. I probably should just go ahead and take it down. That was the Instagram account that I ran for a while, making fun of my favorite game, Word with Friends. But life just gets in the way. You get too busy. Anyway, thank you again, Dave, for joining us. This is a lot of fun. Shout out to Palmer, and shout out I will give to Shira Rubenstein, who went to Palmer a long time ago and then came and worked with me one summer at Jacob's camp. So she's the only person that I know that has been to both of the camps that we went to.
Yeah, there you go. All roads lead back to Palmer.
Yeah, and by the way, Shira Shapiro, I should say. That's her name now. But anyway, we end the show every single time with a saying that my dad would always say at camp, that time is precious and you got to make it count. So he would always tell us to, he would always say, don't waste a minute. So I will say to you, don't waste a minute, Dave. And you can say back to me,
don't waste a minute, Micah.
Nice.
Happiness runs in a circular motion. Thought is like a little boat upon the sea. Everybody is a part of everything anyway. You can have everything if you let yourself be. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs.